I have in front of me a book that is phenomenal as far as its sales, probably one of the top five of all time in publishing history. It's called The Da Vinci Code by Dan Brown. And what I'd like to do is not spend a ton of time on the book itself, because the book is gone and the movie is gone, but it's the charge that's made throughout the book, casting doubt on the Bible, casting doubt on Jesus, casting doubt on the New Testament. Those are the things we want to look at, because those kinds of challenges are out there no matter whether the Da Vinci Code is on the bestseller list or not. But when that book came out, it did stir up a lot of reactions, both positive and negative. As far as reviews, good land. The Library Journal called it a masterpiece that should be mandatory reading. The New York Times called it an exhilaratingly brainy thriller. The Chicago Tribune said the book contains several doctorates worth of fascinating history. Publishers Weekly said it was an exhaustively researched page-turner. Nelson DeMille, who's also a best-selling author, said Dan Brown has to be one of the best, smartest, and most accomplished writers in the country. And Dan Brown himself, he was on Good Morning America one time. He said, "I began the research for The Da Vinci Code as a skeptic. I entirely expected as I researched the book to disprove this." Now, of course, the "this" we're going to be talking about, but basically his job is to cast doubt on the reliability of the Bible, to cast doubt on the Gospels in particular for what they've said about Jesus. So he says, "After numerous trips to Europe, about 2 years of research, I really became a believer." And it's important to remember that this is a novel about a theory that's been out there for a long time. Well, it's more than that. If you read the opener, right at the before the story starts, here's what Dan Brown has: a special page that says in dark print at the top, "fact, colon." And then it's got several facts that he claims are true, which aren't, by the way. But at the bottom, he says, "all descriptions of artwork, architecture, documents, and secret rituals in this novel are accurate." Okay, so one more time. Whatever he says about art, architecture, documents, now that would include the New Testament, and secret rituals are accurate. So, in a sense, what he claims to be writing is something based on truth with just fictional characters involved. Something like, let's say somebody writes a book about World War II, and we see Hitler and Churchill and FDR, and maybe we have two or three fictional characters who are interacting during the war. But it's based on the real events, the real battles, the real decisions, and all the things that did happen. Just inserting a fictional story to go along with it to help people really understand the feeling of the times and gain a history without having to read history. So that's what his claim is. Now, unfortunately, he got so many things wrong. And the reason, again, I want to talk about this is not to put down Dan Brown. I mean, he doesn't need my criticism, but I want us as thinkers to realize what's going on and what really went on rather than what this person's interpretation was. So let's start with history. How did he do with history? Well, no reputable historian agrees with Brown, period. He talks about Constantine. He talks about the Council of Nicaea and some other things. But I want to focus on those two because they have to do a lot with Christianity. So what is his claim about Constantine? This would be around 300 AD. He says that Constantine was baptized on his deathbed against his wishes, that he was a head priest of a cult, he was not a believing Christian, and he's the one who transformed Jesus from a mortal man to the Son of God. And he selected the Gospels that should be included, and he moved Christian worship from Saturday to Sunday. So those are some amazing charges. And you see what's going on there? We've heard this before, that Jesus was just a nice guy, unfortunately ran afoul of the authorities, both Jewish and Roman, got himself put to death, and later on, hundreds of years later, Constantine comes along, the Council of Nicaea comes along and elevates this kind, mystic, sage Jesus into the Son of God. So it's not Brown only that has come up with that theory. That's popular among a lot of skeptics. Well, what's the truth about Constantine? Well, all evidence indicates that he really became a sincere and believing Christian. He was not baptized against his wishes. the earliest Christians were worshiping on the first day of the week. And I won't take the time to go there, but you can look in Acts 20, verse 7, 1 Corinthians 16, verse 2, Revelation 1, verse 10. So Christians worshiped on the first day of the week way before Constantine. He did not, and I emphasize not, he did not put together the 27 books of the New Testament. He did not try to get rid of any earlier Gospels. We're going to talk about these earlier Gospels a little bit later. Brown makes it sound like Christians and pagans were fighting, and then Constantine was trying to settle the argument. But up until Constantine, Christians were actually a small minority. They were being persecuted by everybody else. There was not a power struggle going on. The Christians were on the losing end of it. Now, he mentions Constantine and the Council of Nicaea. So Brown says it was the council that came along and said, okay, let's turn Jesus into something divine. Well, it's not true that Jesus wasn't considered divine until the council. In fact, by the 4th century, the vast majority of Christians acknowledged him as divine. And so the council that met in 325 AD in the town of Nicaea did not debate whether Jesus was divine or just a mortal man. It debated whether he was co-eternal with the Father. They're trying to clarify the unique relationship between God the Father and Jesus. And the vote, Brown said, boy, it was a close vote to make Jesus divinity. It was very close. No. They had something like, I think it was over 200 bishops that voted, and only two of them voted that Jesus was a lesser God. It was not a close vote. Of course, Brown also goes on to claim that Constantine, through using this council, selected 4 Gospels, and that's not true. Most of the Christian canon was already set, already in use, 2 centuries before Constantine, 200 years. And again, we'll come across that a little bit later. So how did Dan Brown do as far as his history? Completely off base when it comes to Constantine and the Council of Nicaea. All right, so that's one area. Let's go to a second area. So he didn't do very well in his history. How about how he viewed Christianity? Well, Brown says Jesus' life was recorded by thousands of followers. No. He claims that the divinity of Jesus was raised and established at the Council of Nicaea. No, we've talked about that already. In fact, there are, again, a lot of verses that I'm not going to take the time to look up. I'll let you do that. But there are a lot of verses that showed the early Christians believed Jesus was divine. Here we go. Romans 10, 9, Philippians 2, 11, Matthew 1, 23, John 1, 1 through 3, John 5, 18, John 20, 28, 1 Corinthians 12, 3. And I would say, by the way, I didn't mention it before, I don't think, but there are even non-Christians. For example, Pliny was a governor in Asia Minor, and he's writing back to Rome asking, what are we going to do with these Christians? He said they meet and sing songs to their leader as to a god. So he even hints, even though he was not a believer himself, he hints that they believed Jesus was divine. The Christian writers between AD 100 and the 4th century believed in Jesus' divinity. So does Christianity come out correct according to Brown? No. He also believes that the story of Jesus is the result of some earlier cultic mystery religions like Mithras and Osiris and things like that. Well, that's been debunked now for the last 15, 20 years. Not true. In fact, instead of these early, what they think of as earlier mystery religions influencing the story of Jesus, it's the other way around. The Jesus story predates these cults. These mystery religions flourished after the closing of the canon of Scripture. For example, Mithraism. It became popular at the end of the first century, after all the Gospels were written. So if you ever see something like Zeitgeist, which is a video, take a look at that sometime. It throws all these things out there about, oh, Jesus is just one more in the mysterious religions. No, not true at all. These mystery religions do not have as much in common with Jesus as they may lead you to believe. And again, there are plenty of books to read about that. We'll talk about that later. What else did he get wrong as far as Christianity goes? Well, the Dead Sea Scrolls. Brown claims that the Dead Sea Scrolls, that they contain gospels, some of the gospels. There were hidden gospels in there. No, they had no gospels at all. There were no references to Jesus. He had the wrong date when they were found. They're all Jewish sects, Jewish texts, by this sect. And it was, the Dead Sea Scrolls were found in the late 40s in the Judean desert. And anyway, so he got the Dead Sea Scrolls wrong. I won't elaborate on that because I'm trying to get through a lot of material here. So no Gospels in the Dead Sea Scrolls. He even got the date wrong. He said, oh, there are all these other Gospels that the church put down and only allowed Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Well, there were some other Gospels. They're called Gnostic Gospels, found at Nag Hammadi in the mid-40s, 1940s, along the Nile in Upper Egypt. And they had these Gnostic writings. Now, the Gnostics believed that this world was terrible and you had to escape it somehow through secret knowledge, gnosis, knowledge. And so it was. They didn't portray Jesus in human terms at all. They didn't emphasize him as a human. And here's the key thing. They were all later. They date at least 100 years after the Gospels. Scholars think maybe they were around by 200 AD. So they were later. They were distortions derived from the four Gospels that we have. They have all sorts of fanciful stories. Let me give you an example. So these are the things Dan Brown says were on an equal footing with Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. There's one called the Gospel of Peter. Here's how it describes the resurrection. There's a crowd. There's a huge noise. The heavens open up. Two men descend in great splendor. The stone rolls away. These two men enter it. The soldiers come out to see the spectacle and what's going on. And from the tomb emerge three men. And the heads of two of them reach up to the sky. They're supporting the third one, whose head reaches up beyond the sky. And behind them comes a cross that talks. Oh, really? How about the Gospel of Thomas? That's the most famous one. Here, Jesus is a guru. He's a divine revealer of secret knowledge to bring you liberation from a terrible, ugly, material world. He's not a human teacher. He's a divine revealer. In fact, there's no stories of Jesus. It's just a bunch of sayings. And you can go online and look at these. They don't sound like Jesus in the four Gospels at all. Salvation doesn't come by believing in his death and resurrection for our sins. You just have to interpret his sayings. And the idea is escape from this world. We have to learn about our divinity, and we just need to escape to learn all of that. Okay, so wrong on the Dead Sea Scrolls, wrong on the Gnostic Gospels. What about his Christian writings? What did he had to say about the Gospels? Did he get those right? Well, they're actually the best and oldest sources for knowing about the life of Jesus. In the New Testament canon, that's C-A-N-O-N, that's the books that are considered official and reliable, they were established way before Constantine. So, Bart Ehrman, I'm going to use him as a resource here. He's a noted scholar and authority on the early church and life of Jesus. He is not a Christian, by the way. He says the oldest and best sources we have for knowing about the life of Jesus are the four Gospels. In fact, he wrote a book, I've got it here, it's called Truth and Fiction in the Da Vinci Code. So he even says Dan Brown got it wrong. The canon actually, the first time there was any kind of controversy over it was in around 150 AD. A man named Marcion rejected some of these early church documents, but the early church itself supported all four Gospels. All right, so this is way earlier. What else did he get wrong? Well, he got people wrong. Dan Brown said Mary Magdalene was married to Jesus and she's the Holy Grail, and the Catholic Church smeared her and they were married and had kids and she was the greatest apostle. And she was the tribe of Benjamin. Well, here's the catch. Greg Kokel, I admire him a lot. He's an apologist. He always says, when somebody makes a claim, you ask, what do you mean by that? And you ask, how'd you come to that conclusion? Well, there's no evidence for any of this. In effect, the early church fathers treated her with respect. She even had a feast day. And if Jesus and Mary were married, why would the Gnostic Gospels have said something about that? No ancient source indicates Jesus was married. If you read 1 Corinthians 9:5, Paul defends his right to have a wife. Now, wouldn't you think if Jesus was married, and Paul would know that, he would say, I have a right to have a wife because Jesus had a wife. He does not mention that. Why? Because Jesus didn't have a wife. Well, real quickly, he got other things wrong. Dan Brown got his art and architecture wrong. Art scholars disagree with most of his statements. Salon.com talks about great art history lesson here. And he, Dan Brown says his wife is an art historian. But he claims, for example, here's some of the problems. He claims Leonardo da Vinci was fearful of the Catholic Church. Actually, the Church commissioned artwork. It was supportive of science and technology. He claims Leonardo was homosexual, worshiper of nature, a spiritual hypocrite. But real art critics say most of those statements are dubious or completely incorrect. He misinterprets some of Leonardo's paintings. Let me give you an example. Let's take the Last Supper. Supposedly, he says that's Mary Magdalene leaning up against Jesus because it looks kind of effeminate, that person. But other paintings at the time showed young men looking effeminate. And in sketches, Leonardo labeled that character, that figure, John. So how did he do with his art and architecture? Not so good. All right. What else? How about this? Brown said the Bible has evolved through countless translations, conditions, and revisions. So you know what he's saying there. He's saying that the Bible that was written 2,000 years ago is not what we have today. People put things in and people took things out. That's misleading. The only changes to the Bible is that we're getting further and further back, closer and closer to the originals as we discover more manuscripts. He claimed more than 80 Gospels were considered for the New Testament. No. Anyway, let's do a conclusion here. Bart Ehrman. Now, I know I've thrown a lot of material at you, but you can go to my website, apologeticsforlife.org. I've got talks on, well, you can watch a video or listen to a talk on the reliability of the Gospels and whether they involved eyewitness reports. So just click on the Bible and you'll find all sorts of things there. So Bart Ehrman, one more time, he's not a Christian. Quote, I am not objecting to Dan Brown's inventing claims about early Christian documents as part of his fictional narrative. The problem is that he indicates that his accounting of early Christian documents is historically accurate. And readers who don't know the history of early Christianity will naturally take him at his word. But there is more fiction than fact, not just in the plot of the Da Vinci Code, but also in its discussion of the early documentary record about Jesus. Absolutely wrong. So, can we trust the Bible? Dan Brown says no, and he gives a lot of reasons. The problem is nobody's backing him up. Can we trust the Bible? Well, real quickly again, you can find more information on my website, but we have tons of manuscript evidences. All sorts of manuscripts are available for us to look at and compare and go back. We have textual critics that do that. They go back to try to find out what the original said. And we're highly, the textual critics are sure to almost an infinite degree that what we have is what the originals were. We have archaeological evidence of the Bible. For example, they've come across recently a stone that indicated Pontius Pilate. We now know about Caiaphas. We've got his bone box. John, in his gospel, mentioned 5 colonnades around the Pool of Bethesda, and they've dug around there and they found 5 colonnades. So there's archaeological evidence to back up the Bible. How about prophecies in the Bible? A lot of prophecies. Of course, the resurrection seems to prove the Bible because there's so many things that we could say to back up the resurrection. Again, I have a talk on that. So Dan Brown wrote it. I'm the first to agree that it is a fun read. It is a terrific read. But the minute you get a character starting to talk, Lee Teabing is his name, once he starts talking about the Gospels and talking about the life of Jesus, he is so off base, it's incredible. Well, in case you're interested and you really want to follow up to know more about the history and some of the errors, there's a book called The Da Vinci Hoax, H-O-A-X, The Da Vinci Hoax, by Olson and Meisel, O-L-S-O-N, M-I-E-S-E-L. That was a good one. If you want a real short read, there's one called The Da Vinci Code, Fact or Fiction. It's by Hank Hanegraaff and Paul Meyer. Hanegraaff is Hanegraaff, and Meyer is Meier. Both those are kind of hard to spell, aren't they? So the Da Vinci Code, it's only, let's see, really, really short. 70-some pages. That's a real quick read. Here's one more by James Garlow, G-A-R-L-O, called Cracking Da Vinci's Code. That's a popular book, sold very well. And then I did mention Bart Ehrman, Truth and Fiction in the Da Vinci Code. Oh man, he really levels them. He talks about, it's a lot of fiction in there. So these are some things that you might find useful as you look at this information. But just consider, books come and go, fads come and go, huge claims come and go, but the Bible always stands firm. It resists these, and these attacks, these challenges end up fading. But it's important for us to realize that these attacks are out there. We need to know our facts, and we need to be able to talk to people about them and to say, yes, we can trust the Bible, we can trust the New Testament documents.